Today's episode of Absurdity is sponsored by The Haystack. The Haystack is a voice for young adults in the Seventh-day Adventist Church that produces articles, music reviews, videos, and more. To check them out, go to www.thehaystack.org. The Haystack, life, culture, theology. Hey everyone, welcome back to Absurdity. We hope you are doing well, and I come bearing good news. We have, as of a week ago, officially passed 40,000 downloads total of Absurdity. Woo. So we are doing well. 40,000 downloads. The hope is that by 100 episodes, we can have 100,000 downloads. That would be amazing. That would actually total us out to about 1,000 downloads per episode.
Average.
So that's kind of the hope. That's the goal. But we're catching up. We're closing that gap.
Honestly, I'm amazed where not only we're not running out of material. Well, it's kind of like people keep doing stuff, so you're never going to run out of material. You know, yeah, like all of the political shows. You know, if the old school Colbert Report or the Late Night Show now or the Late Show, and you know the Daily Show, things like that. Like politicians are never going to stop doing dumb things. So there's an endless supply of material for them. Kind of the same for us. Like church people going to church people. So. Yep. We're going to keep having stuff, but it's just, yeah, it's so cool to me that we're staying strong. Like, it's fun.
It's crazy.
I thought we would struggle a lot more.
I need to fact check myself because I claimed a few weeks ago that we have the longest running or like the most podcast episodes, and that actually was false. I forgot about one, but they haven't posted in a while, so I'm not sure if they're going to keep going, but it's Mission Lab with Sean Brace and Camille Brace. They're actually, the last time I checked a week ago was episode 69, so they're still ahead of us. And I want to give credit to where credit's due because their podcast is amazing. I've just been so distracted. I haven't listened to it lately, but it's been great. So, shout out to you guys and what you're doing on Mission Lab. It's amazing. Yeah. I don't even know if you listen to Absurdity. So, oh well.
If he doesn't, I can tell. I'm good friends with him. So he's a really good guy. Yeah. They're both really good people. But Sean's a really good guy.
I am honest about when I get things wrong. Just so we're clear on that. I realized it recently. So the other thing, just before we dive into today's episode is, and I'm realizing that as I've been advertising for Patreon, I realize that people may not know what Patreon actually is. So patreon.com/absurditypodcast is where you can go to actually support this podcast financially. The hope is that we have enough Patreons that we no longer have to get ads. Does that make sense? So I'd like to be able to make that trade-off. So for patrons to become a patron, it basically think of Patreon as like a monthly version of Kickstarter or GoFundMe, where you are pledging a dollar amount monthly to a creator for the content that they're putting out. So several podcasts are doing this. YouTube channels are doing this. Justin Koo with That Christian Vlogger is doing it. Disruptive Adventism has one. Adventist History Podcast now has one. So there are Patreons for all these different content creators. And the idea is that if you want to support the people that you're consuming content from, that's the way to give. And every dollar helps. And so all you do is go make an account, select what amount you want to pledge. It links right up to your card and it's an auto debit. So you don't even have to worry about it. And how much you give is private. So no one ever has to know how much you're giving or anything like that. Yeah. So if you want to support what we're doing here on Absurdity, I would really appreciate it. Patreon.com/absurditypodcast. So with that, Tony, now that you are in Arizona, which is known for our loudest episodes because someone's always doing dishes in the background at your house, we're going to dive in to the Adventist Revolution. 3 minutes and 50 seconds into the episode, we're diving into the topic. So
we're getting better. We are getting
so much better. So let's talk about this Adventist Revolution. So in light of the GC stuff that's happened, in light of the NAD stuff that's happened, which if you don't know those episodes, A57, A58, and A61 will have all the information you want. We took a break in covering A62 is about mental health. That's last week's. So now we're back to GC stuff for a bit. But basically, in response to stuff that has happened at the GC level, at the General Conference level, with the compliance document, with the Unity stuff, all those different conversations, a man by the name of Michael Polite has decided to launch a campaign that he's calling the Adventist Revolution, #AdventistRevolution. So before we dive into the videos themselves, Tony, as you finish this yawn, can you give us a rundown on who Michael Polite is?
No, they can't see us. You didn't need to do that. You'll need a dragon.
I know, but I want I like narrating what's happening in sight.
I feel like a golf commentator. He's setting up for the explanation. He's bending towards the mic. All right. So Michael Polite is the senior pastor at the New Life Seventh Adventist Church, which is a congregation that meets, Seventh Adventist congregation that meets in the seminary building for the majority of the year. Every once in a while, they will have to move to a secondary location. But they meet at Andrews campus. And in addition to being their senior pastor, he is one of the chaplains at Andrews University. Because they have such a large university, they have multiple chaplains. So I think they have three or four. He is not the lead chaplain, but he is one of the chaplains that's been there. I think going on 5 or 6 years now. He was there when my sister was there, and she was there about 5, 6 years ago. So at least 5 or 6 years he's been there. And yeah, so he's a black man, and he's been quite outspoken about, for instance, the what was it? The video that came out a few years ago about It's Time or something. It was It's Time.
Oh, It's Time AU, the Andrews University thing?
Yeah, It's Time AU. He was very outspoken in his support of that whole movement. He's been very outspoken about some of the need for the diversity. So he's worked a lot with Michael Nixon. I shouldn't say that. He supported Michael Nixon kind of in his decision to be the diversity the vice president for diversity and inclusion, and given him a lot of support and help. But I wouldn't say he runs, it's not like a partnership. Like that's Michael Nixon's job, and he runs it really well on his own. But he's given a lot of support for that and said, this is something we need. This is something that's good. And he's an excellent preacher. That's the other thing. I've heard him a couple times. Very good preacher, excellent speaker. And so that's who he is.
Gotcha. Okay. And just so we're clear, we're not saying any of that is a bad thing.
No.
Exactly. Exactly.
This isn't his first time. This isn't kind of coming out of left field. Like he's kind of provided a history of like, hey, you know, this is an issue. We need to talk about it. He's been very vocal about that.
And just to be clear, as we talk about this, there is a link to a Spectrum article in the episode description, so you can go watch these two videos yourself as I kind of dive into them today. One thing I want to reiterate every time that I link a Spectrum article is this. The reason that we link to Spectrum is because when it comes to reporting on the facts of an event that has happened, they do well about keeping opinions out. So when it comes to like reporting just like hard objective, like this happened and this is a link to it, they're great about that. So if you have a problem with Spectrum because of opinion pieces, oh well.
Well, and they do well for this. I mean, a lot of other times you don't get articles written by the other. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Adventist Review doesn't really write about things that happen. They write about like, oh, hey, check this missionary thing, or this is the new objective. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like they don't really report the news as much as they announce or highlight things that they want to bring about. Same with Adventist Today and other things like that. Like they don't really. They're not really reporting. That's not their main focus versus Spectrum. That's kind of their main thing is we want to, here's what's happening, which is just why we use it more.
Yep, exactly. So you can go look at the videos. You can read Spectrum's write-up about it. No problem. I'm sure you can use your source. Many of you have already heard of this or talking about it. So we wanted to give our thoughts on this and kind of dive into this. So the videos, they're black and white, and it's literally just Michael Polite talking to the camera. And with some music behind him, it's that kind of, and it's a call to action. That's what these videos are. They're a call to action. So part one sets the tone. Part one gives us some history, gives us some understanding of why we need this. What is the current situation? And he opens with a line, and we're going to kind of take this, I guess, point by point. I'm not going to go every single thing he says.
We're going to assume that you are going to either watch the videos or have seen the videos, but we'll go point by point, like a running commentary so that you can kind of, if you haven't seen them, you can kind of get an idea. We recommend you watch them.
Yep. And these were released in October after annual council. So,
yes. They've been around for a bit.
Yep. Individuals, this is how he launches. He says at the general conference session or the general conference annual council in 2018 in October, individuals came together and argued on both sides about whether or not the Seventh-day Adventist Church was in danger of being fractured by different streams of thought. And then he moves into a discussion about unity versus uniformity. Now, here's as I talk about this, it's worth noting that my overall platform, just so all the cat's out of the bag on this, I agree with like 90% of what he's trying to do here. Actually, with what he's trying to do in general, I agree with most of it. Like, in essence, there are a few things here or there that as I watch these videos and as I talk about this Adventist revolution that I have some concerns about and some issues with. And this first line, unfortunately, falls into that category for me personally. I don't know about you, Tony. Which is, I don't know whether that was really the discussion that was happening at annual council. Like, so part of this is he's opening this video by framing the situation, right? And if you're gonna paint a picture of what's going on, I think he's trying to thematically explain what was happening, but I don't even know that that was the discussion. If the danger is being fractured, if the SDA Church was in danger of being fractured by different streams of thought, I don't think that was the discussion. The discussion was, how do we handle noncompliance? And that isn't being, those two things are not that as related as I think that framing tries to make them.
I think thematically what he's kind of bringing in annual council as like an extension of the 2015 GC vote. Which go listen to episode, I think, 19?
17.
17. 19 is where I came in. 17 was kind of, we discussed that and decisions that were made there, in case you are a little behind on that. But yeah, I think he's kind of the whole attitude of everything coming, leading up to and coming from the GC, he kind of considers this document and this annual council as an extension or a... I don't know how to quite put, maybe like a the culmination of all those events.
Okay. Thematically. Which is fine. Like, and but, I agree but yeah, with that.
Like he frames it like, but that's still, what this is about.
And that's a misrepresentation, I think. Like that, like I agree that it is an extension of all of that. Like it is a culmination of it.
But that's not the
but
actual.
At the same time, like that's not what happened at the 2018 General Conference Annual Council. Like, and this is frustrating because, like, to me, this sounds, and I really don't want to undermine what he's trying, like, but I have to, because this is important, and him getting it right is important to me. Like, if you're calling for this, and if you're calling for a revolution, you need to make sure that you're above board, and like, or at least starting clear. Off framing it is, yeah, at least clear.
Because I think this is, yeah, it opens you up to criticism from people who disagree with you,
and it's not criticism you want.
Yeah, it's like critique on what he's actually saying, not on, and that's the thing. I was on a committee when I was at Southern, and they were talking about, and it wasn't like anything controversial. They were just going over the accreditation. And so they were talking about like the goals and different things. And so I kind of had certain ideas, and I want to say it's David Smith. Yes. Who's the current president.
Yes.
He was there. He was the pastor of the church. He'd gone through this the situation accreditation process at Union when he was the president there. And he had said, well, you really don't want to give them more of a target. You want them to critique you on what you want them to critique you on. Because if you open it up, like I was trying to open it up and be like, well, these are the things that we should be looking at. He's like, well, those are all good things, but if you say that in the document, they're going to critique you on those things. So you got to make sure that you have those. So what is it that we actually want them to critique us on? And it was like, oh, that makes a good point. Like that's,
yeah.
So I kind of shut up. I actually turned to one of the people. That was a great point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually turned to one of the people next to me and I'm like, why am I here again? And they're like, you're the comedic relief. I'm like, oh yeah, that's why. Cause I was just like this, you know, they had English majors there who, and pre-law people there who were, you know, actually being like, we need to put a comma here, make sure we have this there, tighten this language here. And I'm kind of like, cause this is the reality is it was very technical language. And when you're casting something like that, that's why if you look at throughout history, the people who started revolutions were always extremely verbose and usually lawyers, because they understood this concept of everything you say is going to get nitpicked and brought down. And so it becomes this, they know how to express themselves and do so in a way that you kind of can't not critique, but that you end up critiquing what they want you to critique.
And yeah, so they still control the conversation.
They control the narrative. Yeah, basically. They control the narrative. Yeah. And that's exactly what it is. I mean, that's, you look at Lenin. Lenin could do that. And when he wasn't, where he failed in that, Trotsky stepped up. Stalin only took over because those two guys set the table for him. You look at Martin Luther. Again, he's a lawyer, right? Who became a theologian, and he was next to theologian. So all these guys who set up these kind of revolutions, Simeon Bolivar, all these guys, they have that lawyer's mentality of, I'm going to control the narrative, even if it's not necessarily true, which I don't think Michael Pollack's doing, but that's why it's so, you have to make sure. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah. And once again, like, I'm not taking away from his overall point that there needs to be something different in the way we act and live. I just think that he's starting it off with a faulty argument or a faulty premise here.
Because the comeback immediately is, that wasn't what they talked about though.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you missed the point then. So it sounds like he's reacting to something that didn't happen. That's not the case.
It's bigger than just the annual council.
So let's keep going here. Otherwise, we're going to be here forever. So he advocates for unity as harmony instead of unity as uniformity. And he actually breaks into a metaphor or an example of those who are musically minded. You would know that a harmony is another note that resonates well with your... I'm not musically minded, but the main note that you're trying to sing. So, a harmony works in unison with the melody, but it's not meant to be the exactly the same. And so he identifies this, and then he talks about how unity is also not conformity. And now here's something and I like all of that. By the way, I love all of that, right? We just spent 5 minutes critiquing something, so let's spend a minute here.
No, yeah,
I agree with that wholeheartedly. Love it, and I've done an entire episode on. We've done multiple episodes on unity versus uniformity. Big fan of this. All right, big fan of this. Then he breaks into a point, and this is just part one, where he says, "Our young professional founding fathers and mothers seceded from an institution that sought uniformity over unity, at the sacrifice of the local mission." This statement confused me because I'm not really sure what he's talking about. Because he's talking about early Adventism, 100%, but I don't know what specific historical moment he's referencing.
Well, I think he's specifically referencing 1844. But that's why I go over local mission. I'm like, well, that wasn't really it.
Yeah,
but it was this idea of uniformity. Like, they saw truth and they followed that truth. To me, that's what I would have said.
Okay.
Spirit, but it wasn't over local mission. It was over vision.
My thing identity. Is, like, because it's not clear, like, okay, I'm an Adventist pastor. I actually still am. I'm a lay pastor now, so I'm still a pastor. I'm a pastor. I'm someone who engages in this stuff. And I don't know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
The majority of the people that he's calling on to act probably know even less than I do. Like, on average.
Yeah.
There are definitely lay people that know way more about Adventist history than I will ever know. There are lay people that know way more Ellen White quotes than I do. Way more scripture than I do.
Taking classes on it, though.
Yeah. Like, I'm not saying that, like, oh, I'm the bar. I'm just saying, like, in general, he's talking with people who are disillusioned and disengaged. So they're not going to know offhand the references. So I wish he had included something in here referencing specifically what he's talking about.
Yeah, that would have been nice. I think also the other thing is if he had specifically tied it in with the general theme of what he's talking about. Because to me, all of a sudden it took a right turn where it's like, well, I don't think the GC is against local mission. Yeah. I think they're into – because that's the thing that bugs me. They're against this one specific type of local mission. But I think if we were like, we need to do, there's a cultural shift, which is why you hear things like, well, you got to watch out for worldly music or worldly, you know, worship services and stuff like that. But I don't think if you were to say, we need to change up the way we do evangelism to reach people in Ohio, I don't think the GC would be like, no, this is terrible. I have heard that from people, from some of the leadership in Texas has specifically said, you will try it the good old way first. And I'm like, well,
yeah, I've heard that. Yeah.
That's just because it's worked before. A doesn't mean it's going to work now. And B doesn't mean it was even working then, but that's not the point. So I just wish it would have tied it in with the idea of they left because they saw truth and they followed truth rather than tradition and this call to uniformity.
Yep.
And so to me, I think that would be a true statement. And that's something that you can, again, easily defend. And everyone's like, yeah, no, that's true. I know that.
I wish he had said something to the effect in transition here of saying like, and what we are seeing now is a move or some sort of push for uniformity from our current institution or from current parts, some parts of the institution. That would have been a nice kind of bridge there. But now I'm just critiquing like his, and I'm just critiquing the script rather than his actual position here.
Because I think I think the big thing was just that idea of like, when was this? Like, we're not all masters of, it begs credulity to a degree.
All right, so here's probably my favorite part of all of it, right here. This is my favorite part, and if you are on the verge of Adventism, if you're on the doubt side of it, honestly, if you're on the doubting edge of any denomination, this is going to resonate with you if you grew up in your faith.
Yeah.
This next section is going to be, I couldn't agree more with him, couldn't echo this enough. I would tweet this if it was short enough. It's amazing. This is what he said. He said, the indoctrination we have received since childhood has been so deeply ingrained that many of us don't know what to do when we feel offended by the institution. If we decide to do something new, start a new movement, something like that, if we decide to do something new, then we are leaving the remnant church and our salvation, our soul salvation, is in jeopardy. And if we stand and fight for what we believe in, we are told that protest culture has no place in God's kingdom. If we leave, we are derided. And if we stay, we are ostracized. Love that. Couldn't agree more with all of that. In many cases, there are Adventists who are more, how do I want to say it? They are more committed to the cause of Adventism, like, right? They're more committed to their Adventism than they are to the Jesus that is behind their Adventism. And so this is huge.
Yeah.
Because go ahead.
No, this happens a lot in fundamentalist churches and evangelical churches as well. If Jesus showed up today, he wouldn't be allowed in to Adventist,
some Adventist churches. He'd be kicked out.
I want to say most, I'll say some Christian and Adventist churches. I want to say most, I really do. But yeah, he was kicked out of the majority of the synagogues he was in his time. So that's why, not that most churches would kick him out, but I'm like, historically, Jesus didn't do well when he went inside an organization. Like when he went into structured, organized places, they usually were like, you need to get out. Because you're telling crazy stuff. And he's like, I'm preaching the word of God. Like, you guys are the ones that don't recognize this. So, yeah, I'm with you on that this indoctrination has... Jesus was a rebel. Jesus was the most revolutionary figure in historical ever. Because outside of maybe Gandhi and one could somewhat argue Karl Marx... even though Marx did advocate for violence, he didn't advocate for violence as much as he predicted it. But everybody else, like Jesus was the most revolutionary because he not only advocated for change and was revolutionary and radical in his doing it. He was radical in the sense that he not only did it from a place of peace, but he also said, now love your enemies. So he wasn't just like, we're going to use nonviolent methods. He was like, no, I want you to pray for those who persecute us. Like, I want you to go and specifically make their lives better. The people that are hurting us. Like, that's how we're going to change the world. And so, like Jesus was, he was a protester. He was the most radical. And the funny thing is we come from a group of historical radicalists and revolutionists and reformists right? With Luther, Zwingli, Wycliffe, you know, go down the line, you know, John Williams. And anyway, all those guys, you could just go down the line, and we are crazy people that just don't take the status quo. That is our heritage. And then on top of that, the founders of our church were these young kids that were like, we're just not going to take what anybody else says. And we actually had an episode on all of this where we talked about the idea of the church kind of leaves you in a state of needing the church, right? Like, what was the actual title we used for that?
I forget. It was a state of dependency.
Yeah, state of dependency. Yeah. Where this church kind of leaves you dependent on itself. And I go, that's exactly what he's talking about here. Is this you're darned if you do, you're darned if you don't. If you see problems in the church, you can't respond to them, and you also can't leave. Just shut up and get
and
in
that's,
line.
I think, and the church has done a really poor job, I think, and this is humanity in general, but we've done a really poor job of letting people have their journey. And I think that's sad, because like even one of our close friends left for 10 years. And if he hadn't been allowed to have his journey, and if it wasn't for the pastor that walked with him through that entire time, I don't know that he'd be back here with us. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So this is one of those things where I couldn't echo his point more, that when you feel offended, when you are hurt, like we really don't have space. And what ends up happening is when someone does feel like they're doubting their faith, they feel like they have to disengage in order to deal with their doubts instead of engage to deal with their doubts. And that's the exact opposite of what we want, right? That's the exact opposite of what anyone struggling with their doubts should want.
I think what
that's kind of where I stand on that.
Yeah. What he did super well was, and ironically, this is our first critique, was he didn't say it or express it super on the point. What he does so well here is the two descriptions at the very end. He says, if we leave, we are derided. And if we stay, we are ostracized. And I go, those are the two just, I think that the best way to describe the millennial generation in the Seventh-day Adventist Church are those two words.
Yeah.
Derision.
Derided or ostracism.
Derision.
Is that a word?
And ostracism. You know, when they did, we were talking about, and this is even old, but the Barna Group did a study called You Lost Me about young adults, specifically in the millennial generation. They said the largest group of young adults are called exiles.
Nuns.
They're exiles in their own generation, where they stayed in the church, but they feel like they're in exile. They're like, I'm with my people, but I don't feel like I'm with my people. The smallest group were those, the prodigals. They've actually like straight up left. They're gone. That was the smallest group. The largest group were these exiles, and they just have this feeling of, it's not my church. I was born here, you know, in Babylon, away, exiled. And I think that's the best way to describe kind of these millennials is we were born into a generation that questions. And we were born into a church that does not value questioning anymore. And in fact, derides it. And you feel demeaned. You feel patronized. You feel demonized to a degree.
Yeah.
And pitied. You know, we've had so many friends leave the ministry. And I'm sad because they left ministry, not because they left the ministry. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm sad for them because, like, man, it sucks that you don't want to do ministry anymore, but I totally get why you don't want to do ministry in this political environment. Like, I don't pity them. I'm not like, oh, well, they left the church. I'm like, nah, man, it just sucks because, like, you've got so much talent. Like, we have a loss instead of feeling, oh, well, how dare they, or, you know, they just that's didn't have any like, faith it's, or whatever. Like, that's how I feel. But I had not, like, I can't tell you how many times growing up we were told, oh, they leave the ministry. They leave the ministry. And I'm like, I don't view being a pastor as a lifetime gig. I view ministry as a calling.
But
I
wasn't called to be a pastor. There's a lot of people that would say you should never be a pastor.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that will say you should never be one then. If your calling isn't to be a pastor, then you shouldn't be a pastor.
And that's the idea. And I go, but that's such an old school idea. It's like, the apostles never did just one thing. Like, that role shifted and changed so much. Paul, I mean, in his life, he did Sometimes he was evangelism. Sometimes he was church planting. So, like, he took on so many different roles. He was a writer. Like, why are we only saying, like, anyway, the point is, I think he nailed it on with those two feelings, because those are the feelings that we have. We feel derided and demonized or ostracized.
Definitely. And I agree.
And no ownership.
And you call Jesus the greatest revolutionary, and Michael Paulette agrees here. He calls him that too. So, this is big. I agree with it 100%. So in spirit right now, I agree with him. The one thing I wish that and he is calling in this episode, he calls for the specific words he used are an apostolic revolution. The same kind of revolution that drove the apostles in Acts 1 to begin the movement of Christ known as the Way in the old, in Acts. So this is, so he's calling for something like that, where he wants people to be filled with the fire of the Holy Spirit, the passion that that brings, and he wants them to act on that and move forward. So that's what he calls for in the first video, right? So that's part one.
Yeah, which I think nobody would disagree with, right? I mean, even conservatives.
Everyone wants revival.
Yeah, and even conservatives he's conservative. Even traditionalists, like the uber right wing traditionalists, are they're like, yeah, we want apostolic revolution. Where I think he really deviates is the second video on how he views that apostolic revolution.
Yeah, exactly. So let's talk about part two. Let's talk about part two. So part two is shorter, and part two is where it gets practical. So part one is the background and the actual call. Part two is the call to action and the specifics, of how this actually plays out. Now,
so
I'm not going to go into
how.
Specific. Yeah. So he calls for three things. And I think Tony and I both are good with two out of three of these. See if you can take a guess to figure out which of the three that I'm about to list. But
we'll just go through. In theory, I'm good with all three.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think
it's called for.
I think the degree and the, I'm okay with, I'm straight up like, I'm down for one. The other two, I'm like, well, anyway, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So part two is more practically outlines three ways in which viewers or those are watching these videos can join this Adventist revolution. The first one is this: we must become intolerant of institutional justice. We must become intolerant of institutional injustice.
Injustice.
Yeah.
With institutional justice.
Yeah. Yeah. We must become intolerant of institutional injustice. Yeah. So the point here is when the institution is discriminating against anyone is, so the kind of underlying message here would be women's ordination currently, but there's systemic racism in Michael Polite's history of fighting against. So that would be another implied thing that he's calling against is as an injustice is we must become intolerant of. Go ahead.
No, yeah, he keeps it pretty general, like you were saying. You know, like it's just kind of any type of injustice that's done to anyone.
Yeah. So. Then he says, we must value and maximize the power of our influence. We must value and maximize the power of our influence. So that is talking about our voice activating. I think the word he uses here is activating our voices in speaking out and getting involved in speaking out. And so this is talking about engaging with a local level. This is talking about getting involved. This is talking about using Twitter and climbing the ranks climbing the ranks of Twitter, but climbing the ranks in the church and getting involved at the ground level and moving
social
up.
Media, so everything. Yeah. At all levels.
Good call. Yeah. Good call. All right. And then number three, we must take a renewed interest in the role and responsibility of our investments. So those are the big three, and you can see why, why we might disagree with that last one. Now, knowing that Tony and I I'm funded by tuition dollars. Like, that's my paycheck. But at one point I was funded by tithe dollars. Tony, you were funded by tithe dollars as a sponsored person in seminary. So, like, so he calls for a renewed interest in the role and responsibility of our investments. And what he basically says is stop tithing, stop sending money to the institution that is causing these injustices or carrying out these injustices.
He specifically goes, he specifically calls out, I'm not just talking about time or energy, I'm specifically talking about financial. And so it's like, I was good with it until you did that. And then the other thing he specifically says is, I'm specifically talking about removing tithe from the local mission. And I was like, okay, he's not wrong. He says it's unbiblical. There's not a biblical basis for putting tithe in a central storehouse and all that. And I'm like, you're wrong. There was, it's the Levites, like that's in the book of Leviticus, but not for the local church, not in the New Testament. And I agree with that part. Where like, they didn't like give to like a one central place, you know, it stayed in Corinth or it stayed there. It's, you know, the only biblical example we have is when, and I can't remember which city and it's killing me, but I want to say it's maybe Ephesus, where there was an earthquake and the church was really struggling and they took funds. People in Jerusalem, all the church came together and they sent funds out to help with that relief. That's the only biblical example we have of central location going out. So that part, I'm like, all right, well, technically you're correct. But I just, I just think he goes too far with that. And again, I know I'm biased, you know, but.
Okay, but let's explain why we're biased here. Yeah. Which, by the way, Tony, if you can do me a favor and back off your mic by like an inch.
Yeah, sorry.
You're okay.
I'm a little hot. So, I'm a little hot.
Yeah, you're a little hot. So the reason that I struggle with this, because in theory, this is correct.
Yeah.
If the organization is doing something you don't approve of, you withhold your money because your money talks, right? We do this with Starbucks, we do this with every organization. Companies are driven by their income. And so the way to get them to do what you want is to hurt their profits. Cool. Makes sense. The problem, and this is, I don't know if this is genius on the part of Adventism or not genius, but here's the problem with withholding tithe from the central storehouse, regardless of whether that central storehouse is biblical or not, because you could argue that logistically it wasn't even possible in biblical times, right? at least not the way that it happens in our, you know, in our system today, sending money transfers.
They didn't have churches like
currency exchange rates, all that. Yeah. They don't. Yeah. It's not the same. Right. But here's the thing, by withhold tithe pays everyone. Tithe pays church pastors. It pays administrators, which means that it pays for the things that you agree with and the things you disagree with. So by withholding, because of the things that you disagree with, you are now hurting the things that you agree with. So you're hurting, like, let's talk about, you want to champion women's rights and you want to champion women's order. And this is going to be hard because I don't even know how to answer the question I'm about to bring up, right? There are 49 ordained women pastors in the North American division right now. And there are many more women pastors in general. If you want to withhold your tithe from the GC because they don't want to ordain women, you are now withholding money that affects the paychecks of the women that are already employed by the church, including the 49 ordained ones. So there's I don't know how to answer that dichotomy here, but either way, like, you are, by trying to hurt the organization, you're also hurting the people that are on the same side as you.
Yeah.
Michael Polite can call for this because he's not paid by tithe. He's paid by tuition dollars that go through Andrews, is my assumption, because as a member, as an employee of the university at Southern, it's the same. However, because he's a chaplain, that may not be the case.
I don't
know. I have to take back that statement.
I don't know.
And either way, like, even if he was paid by tithe and he's calling for that, right? He's, to be fair, that would be more self-sacrificial. Sure. He's saying like, but like,
is he though? Yeah, because he's saying, which church is going to support him? His own local church. So if he has a 18 church district, that hurts him.
Yeah.
But not if he's got a decent sized church, which,
like,
he does.
So you, like, listen, the first people to go in this system, when tithe gets shortened, is district pastors. Yeah. Is my assumption.
Yeah.
Is like the quote unquote lowest of the totem pole. So you're calling by withholding tithe, you're saying that my position just even a year ago as a district pastor, you're hurting me. Now, I wouldn't.
I think your church, tithe is going your down church or not, could have paid for you, I think, but yeah.
No, they couldn't.
Oh, they couldn't. Never mind. I take it back.
Nope. So like, but that's my point, right? Like this is the struggle or the tension that exists between how you give out your funds. And this is my problem with that. You're hurting the people you agree with too. You're hurting the people that have done nothing wrong, unless you consider working for the organization something wrong. So that's my struggle with this. I agree that we should take a renewed interest in the role and responsibility of our investments.
Yeah,
and I believe also means like, I do mean that. I do think that means giving more to the local mission, but that doesn't mean you withhold tithe.
Yeah.
It means you give more to the things that you want to see happen.
Well,
you know what else I think? And you have the ability to mark what your donation is for. So your church legally can only use the funds for certain things.
For what they want. Yeah.
For what you have donated for.
Yeah.
So like, it's not even like you're at risk of your money being mismanaged. And if it is, you can sue. So like, take your pick there.
Well, I wouldn't recommend that because
there's a biblical principle. But yeah, like,
but God knows. First off, there's a greater, as Christians, there is a bigger force that is watching this. So if you think that people, quote unquote, got away with mismanaging funds or whatever, they might not have gotten their punishment right now. But believe you me, they will get what they is will. Coming to them. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
God is not mocked. So, yeah.
I like the wording. We must take a renewed interest in the role and responsibility. That's exactly. Like, all right. I love that wording. I think it communicates like you should be involved in the church that is using the money you're giving it. All right.
Yeah.
And you should be tracking with what they're doing. You should be advocating for what you want to advocate for. Fully and wholly back that. I'm not okay with just blanketly or tacitly saying, We should redirect what is our tithe into the local mission or the local congregation. Now, there are advantages and disadvantages to it too, because like technically for what is I think there's a talk that Tim Gillespie did on the future of Adventism at Boulder Church, and he talked about how in I think it was in his conference. I don't know every conference that has this, but your church has to have a minimum amount of tithe given before you can have a pastor. And that number, so like, I think it's like it's $200,000, I think, for the first pastor. $400,000 is the set that he was giving from his experience, right? So $200,000 for the first pastor, $400,000 for the second pastor, $800,000 for the third pastor, and then it's $1.2 million, I think. So like, it keeps it exponentially increases. It just keeps doubling instead of actually rising and making sense. Whereas your church, if it was just being given all that money locally, could hire for cheaper.
Yeah. It's 1 point. I think so it's 1.6 for,
1.6 for a fourth.
For the fourth. Yeah. Cause I think it's 2, 4 and then 8 and then 1.6. So it's like it doubles after the second pastor every time.
Yeah. So that's I get like it can actually be more cost effective to keep more things local. That's fine. If that's the case, then we need to advocate for a new system of handling our money, that which I get that that's a much bigger battle. Don't get like, oh, well, that's unrealistic. I don't think anything is necessarily unrealistic within the realm of faith, but outside, I'm not saying like if you have enough faith, that'll work. I'm just saying like we work and we reform. That's what we do. Yeah. Like that's just how that works. So, but that tithe is the reason that a lot of local people are getting work done.
Yeah. I think the other thing is, as we get more, this is the only thing I will say in defense, not defense of it, but it's the only thing I will say that will slightly, maybe possibly agree with his feeling. As the church, as society grows more metropolitan, which it is, about 80% of the U.S. lives in major cities now. As it grows more metropolitan, our mission should switch from the country to the cities. And as much as I love our brethren that live in these tiny little towns and I respect them, I think we are wasting pastors in places that don't have any growth potential. Waste is a strong word. I don't feel. But like, just because the church is small, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying small churches. I'm saying you can have a small church in a big city. Like I grew up in a tiny little church, but it was a city of 85,000 people, and it was growing at the time. And even though we were a small church, there was a lot of growth potential there. My problem is you have churches of 20 people in cities of 800 people. Are there souls there that are just as precious? Yes. Should they get a pastor? That's a questionable statement.
Okay, but see, like, okay, this is where we disagree then. Yep. Because as someone who just pastored that, people come up to me and completely, what's the word I want here? Denigrate, something. They basically... insult the quality or the necessity of the work that I did over the last 2 years. And they say, man, you were just wasted in that district. You have so much more potential. And, you know, you were just wasted putting in that district that wasn't going to do anything. And my thought is like, cool. So we're just going to abandon our people in those places. Like we're just going to abandon them and not take care of them. And not, I don't necessarily think we're wasting pastors. I do think we're wasting a lot of money. But I think, like, in other words, I think we should reapproach those churches and say, hey, we're here to, yes, actually serve this community and grow it and whatever, but our focus is going to be in these cities where people are, like, I feel like we can have some honest conversations.
I think we can have some honest conversations.
Because
the idea
But I'm not necessarily a fan of...
Every like, pastor needs you, a church. I think we need to reevaluate that. First off, I think there's too much reliance on a pastor. And the pastor's role, as we've talked about many times, it needs to be an educator. Yeah. But to me, again, when I go back to, and this is beyond, because I want to make sure we're not talking out of both sides of our mouth, because we just had an episode a few weeks ago where we talked about why it was good for the for tithe parity in the U.S. Or the North American division. But let me make a difference. What we are saying here is not that we're an advocate for. I believe that. We need to support our outside churches. And that's why the system is the way it is. We would have stayed. This is the problem with community churches where their tie stays in. They are never bigger than their community. Yes, they might grow big in that community, but they are never bigger than that community. And as a world church, we are called to send the Adventist message. Like it's in our name. Go out and spread the Adventist message. Make sure everybody knows we're coming. I agree with that. And the only way we could logistically do that is having a central tithe house. Because up until maybe 15 years ago, South America, the majority of it was not self-sustaining. And still to this day, the majority of our divisions are not self-sustaining. They don't make enough money to keep going. It's in the sense of to have their buildings and have, to do the things that they need to do. They're not self-sustaining. They don't have that. The economies aren't good enough for a variety of reasons. I'm not getting into the politics of why, but they're just not. That's just the reality. And I don't think we should abandon them. However, when we talk about this idea of re-bringing tithe back, I'm talking about tithe parity. So I'm not saying the U.S. shouldn't give more. I'm saying as far as tithe parity, all right, this is the requirements of uniformity that now we all give an equal amount. What the difference between that and this is they're saying we shouldn't get what Michael Pillay is essentially saying is we should not give to the division and the union at all. And I understand that I have a bias. My dad works at the division before that he worked at a union. But understand if I thought my dad didn't do anything important, I would absolutely say the unions are useless. The divisions, the officers and all that, it's useless. Why do we even have them? But the truth is they do incredibly important work. Work that does not get seen at the local level most times because they're of the distance, but they do a lot. Don't think they don't. It's a different type of role. It's not as hands-on, although I think that now that's starting to change. But divisions do a lot. So there is a lot there. I think it's necessary. And beyond that, I think it's important. The structure that we have, if we burn it all down to the ground, and this is the one problem with revolutions, is that you burn everything to the ground only to realize to build it back up and have the exact same system you had. I think we should improve the system we have, which is why I advocate, like I was saying, I'm cool with making sure there's no injustice and making sure that, you know, we have a renewed interest in our investments. But I think the degree and the way that he takes is like, I don't think that's it. I don't think that's the answer.
See, and that's my thing. Like, I'm a big fan of what he's trying to do. I'm a big fan of,
I just think the specifics,
getting more involved. Yeah. Like, I feel like our issue is not at all with what he's doing as a, in purpose or in spirit. I feel like our issue with what he's doing completely has to do with language. And like, that's, and someone can like the way that he's, except for that last point, because that last point, he actually calls for something very specific. But as far as like, yeah, the, like the way that he sets some of this up, I think that that's where our big issues are, right, is the way that he says things. And like, that's, someone could say like, that's pretty nitpicky of us, but if you're calling for something on this level, you need to cover your bases. And I'm not going to be seen as just piggybacking on any liberal movement that happens in this church,
yeah,
either. So, well, I'm a fan of what this is. And yeah, anyone, there was a third video that came out of different people's testimonies saying why they're joining, yeah, the Adventist Revolution. Fan of that video as well. Fan of every single person that I recognized in that video.
Spirit.
And I love what they're trying to do. This call for engagement, this call to get involved and to make a difference. Like, I'm such a big fan of that. And I don't want to take away, yeah, from that or steal anyone's fire. It's not that at all. I think that's my entire point of doing this and several of the other projects I do, is to increase engagement, yeah, into our church.
Anything that does that, we're a fan of.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. I want to see this be successful. I just don't know that I want to see it be successful this way. That's kind of my concern.
I think it won't be. And I think that's why I'm so very careful to say, I love the spirit of it, but the details, the devil's in the details. God and the devil are both in the details. I want to make sure that all that energy that's created is funneled into the correct, in the path. Most, yeah. Like, to me, again, that's why I said, I do think we need to have some honest conversations about where our money goes. I'm down with that, because 80% of people are living in cities, but the majority of Adventists are not.
Yeah.
So I think we need to start having some honest conversations about how this is working. As far as in the NAD, I don't know enough about outside of that, but I really think that the importance of this, when it comes to, we must be intolerant of institutional justice. Huge fan of that. I think that's important. But at the same time, we need to make sure that anything that says intolerance is very, very carefully done. If you want to do surgery and cut out the bad parts, you have to use a scalpel, not a machete, right? You know, because then you can't just go, yeah, hacking around. Any surgeon will tell you that it requires precision. Same thing with the renewed interest and role. I think energy and time and all of that. And you know, I've called this several times. You know, to me, I think the most underappreciated and underused tool we have in the Adventist Church is our deacons. And it's like, hey, we've got these guys that are, they can be doing visitations and Bible studies and all of this. And instead we're just like, well, open up the church and set up for potluck. And what? So those are the things that I'm good for. But the spirit of it, this is what I appreciated. I want to kind of end my session on this. His motivation and spirit is one of get angry and involved.
It's righteous indignation.
He doesn't call for leaving. He doesn't call for blanket sweeps and you know, we will make,
he's not calling for anyone's
he's
jobs.
He's not calling for anyone's he's jobs. Calling. He never named anybody. To me, that's a huge one. He didn't name anybody. Mm-hmm. He said, this is a systematic institutional issue that we need to fix by getting involved. And I go, absolutely. That I am 100% behind.
Well, and I agree with you. Absolutely. 100%. And Michael, if you hear this episode and you've listened to this point, because, and you're probably going like, oh, I need to talk with these guys and clarify all of this. Cool. You're welcome to. We'd love to have you, yeah, on if you're listening to this. But we want you to know, like, we support what you're doing.
Yep.
We really do. And I support what you're doing. At Andrews, I support what you're doing in all of the conversations you've had and what I've tracked. I've never talked with you personally if you're listening to this, but you know, that's big. My thing too, there's another point to be said about this, which is, had he been perfectly had he communicated all this perfectly and without the kind of the harsh words, there's the argument to be made that this wouldn't have actually called anyone to action. So I remember sitting in class at Southern once, we were reading a Russell Burrell book, and our professor kind of described Russell Burrell as this way, because a lot of students were reacting to some of the words we read in Russell Burrell's books. They were reacting harshly, like he's taking way too harsh of a stance on this. And basically what our professor argued was, sometimes if you want to pull a carriage or a cart somewhere, you have to go before the cart. Like, you have to go further than the cart to get the cart where you want it to be. And that's what Russell Burrell is doing. There's the argument to be made here that what Michael Polite is calling for is so radical that many people won't actually go the entire way. They won't go the full steps to do it, or they won't buy so fully into the vision that they lose sight of anything. Instead, they'll get involved to a certain percentage or a certain degree, and where they actually get involved and where that cart actually ends up stopping ends up being the place that it needed to stop. And I think there is some validity to that. But at the same time, it's completely speculative validity. Like, there's no way for me to quantifiably prove that that's his motive, or that that's going to be the case. And in many ways, me talking about that is the cat out of the bag on it, and may actually shoot that in the foot too. Some things you just kind of hope people catch on to instead of actually saying them. But like, I want to be as fair as possible here. I know we've been hard on him, but I agree with you. He didn't call for anyone's head. He didn't call anyone's name. He didn't call for anyone to leave. And in fact, he called for more money to funnel into the church, technically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like,
which again, I support. Huge. Yeah. Like I was like,
great.
It was just one little thing of like,
great. So close.
I think in order to do what God has called us to do as a church, we do need a central storehouse. That's the only part that I kind of was like,
yeah,
I think we do need to, because otherwise we won't be bigger than those individual communities.
Yep. So like I think that's a good place to kind of end on. We'll end this episode a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
But this look, watch those videos, get engaged, do that. And on that note, actually, as I kind of walk this out, this is before the outro, so don't leave if you listen to the outro, or if you always skip the outro, right? This is not the outro. Myself and a friend of mine are working on a new project, and it's not... it's not officially released. Branding hasn't been actually established for it, so I can't say more than this, but we are working on a new project that helps make all of this stuff way more accessible to you in the palm of your hand. So look, be on the lookout for that over the next couple of months. That's all I can say about it right now, but I'm really excited about it because I think it'll solve a lot of the problems that I've been dealing with and running into in regards to accessibility to what's going on in the Adventist world. So take a look for that. Be on the lookout for it. Tony knows a little bit about it, but
I'm wondering if I do. I want to do a quick shout out, by the way, to a third member of our team. Are we allowed to do that?
No. Nope. But we are grateful to have this person on board.
Yay. Okay. That never is, mind. Cool.
So we are very grateful for this person. There are reasons that we can't give a shout out.
Then we're very grateful
for them.
You know who you are.
Yes. But if you listen to this podcast on iTunes, please leave a review. You can subscribe on any podcatching app. If you have any comments, questions, or feedback for the show, you can email me, ryan180becker@gmail.com, or you can find me on Twitter, ryan180becker, or tony_anobile, A-N-O-B-I-L-E. So that is how you can find us. Or Tony, what's your actual, what's your name on Twitter?
Yeah, the new Dr. Jones. Or you can email me at antonioa@andrews.edu.
So there you go. Cat's out of the bag. Tony's at Andrews, if you didn't know. So,
dun.
But thank you guys so much for listening. If you want to support financially, patreon.com/absurditypodcast. We'll see you guys next week.